Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Let's see. Towards the very end of the book, she finally does do some growing up. And here is at the end, towards the end of the book, right after Melanie has died. And spoiler alert, Melanie dies. Everybody knows that. She's thinking to herself, "He never really existed at all, except in my imagination," she thought wearily. "I loved something I made up, something that's just as dead as Melly is. I made a suit of pretty clothes and fell in love with it." I think that's a really powerful moment of self-awareness for her, and I think it speaks volumes to so many women who fall in love with the wrong guy because of the way he looks or the way he presents himself. Or now, Ashley, you know, didn't turn out to be an abusive husband or anything like that, but it's just the wrong guy, you know, mm-hmm. and confusing almost like the socially acceptable, what we're supposed to fall in love with, instead of the real, whatever's real. And she recognizing that, you know, especially as a young woman, a young teenager, she fell in love with something that didn't really exist. It wasn't really Ashley. It was this image of him that she created almost in her own mind. I think that you know, that is an entryway to talk about, you know, teenage relationships and young, you know, just a lot. I just thought that was a lot of, that had a lot. But maybe more workshoppy.
Well, I don't know. I like this one, and I think that the suit of pretty clothes, that could have some artistic possibility right there.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with this one. This one's probably on my at least in consideration pile for
okay.
this book.
All right. And then the next one I think is a kind of a good moment of her awareness of true love, what true love is for her. And it's also indicative that a lot of it's the moment she realizes that a lot of her, this is towards the end of the book, a lot of her actions and behavior and choices have been made out of fear, and this is the counter to that almost. Suddenly she felt strong and happy. She was not afraid of the darkness or the fog, and she knew with a singing in her heart that she would never fear them again, excuse me. No matter what mists might curl around her in the future, she knew her refuge. She started briskly up the street towards home, and the blocks seemed very long, far, far too long. She caught up her skirts to her knees and began to run lightly. But this time she was not running from fear. She was running because Rhett's arms were at the end of the street. This is when she realizes that he's been there for her and knows her and is her refuge. She can be herself with him. And this entire book is one of the main themes is this is a woman who cannot be herself in her society, with her friends. There are only two people that accept her for who she is. Melanie and Rhett. Ashley doesn't, Mammy doesn't, her mother doesn't, her sisters don't, her father doesn't, nobody. It's, you know, there is in the book a third person, but since nobody knows about him, I won't even mention him right now. But you know, this is the moment where she realizes the love of her life. She's married to him, you know. She's been married to him. They've literally had, you know, two pregnancies together, you know, a living child and one that didn't. She had a miscarriage, you know. I mean, but this is the moment. It takes the entire book for her to figure this out. You know, it's really a big moment, and I love that it allows this strong, you know, independent woman to acknowledge that he is her refuge and he is her safe port in the storm because he accepts her for who she is and always has. Of course, no spoilers allowed because everybody knows the ending of the story. The tragedy is she figures it out too late. he's tired. You know, he doesn't want to deal with it anymore. But at least she figured it out, you know. Which leads to the last quote, the most famous quote of all time. I'll think of it tomorrow at Tara. I can stand it then. Tomorrow I'll think of some way to get him back. After all, tomorrow is another day. That's her mantra through the whole book. And at the end of the book, it's just tragically sad because, you know, we don't have the faith that she can get him back. But, you know. But so those are my most top favorite quotes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be very hard for me to say which I think would be best for our NICE project. I think all of them are good in a lot of ways with workshops and in comparison to each other and to the other passages we've talked about from the other three books. So what are your thoughts on, say, your top...
Four favorites.
Okay, four favorites. That's what I was going to say. Top three or four, so...
The first one is I Wish to Have and I Was Married, where she's attacking the yams.
Yeah, I like that.
I really like that because that shows so much of her personality.
Yep.
And that also is going to pair really well as we're talking about, like, the role of women. Mm-hmm. And that one, I think, would be great discussion.
Yeah, I think it's a great jumping-off point for cultural norms for women in different time periods and in the different selections we have and everything. So, yeah, I like that one, too.
Next one I have, the one that begins, "When she arose at last and saw the black ruins of 12 Oaks."
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one because of just that attitude of persistence. I think that can relate to our current situation with the COVID-19. I think that, like, the sensory details of the heavy basket, mm-hmm. The black ruins, I think that one has some good potential for the creation of art.
That one is probably my favorite one for our purposes because it's an entryway into so many of our various themes, and I think it also works with our other books, you know, in a way we can talk about them all. And I think I also admit that is the one quote that I feel the common perception of this book, and it's hard to talk about the book and not the movie because more people have seen the movie than read the book. You know, but the common perception, this is the quote that starts that conversation of the common perception is not accurate for this historical, you know, this fiction story set in a historical time period. This is the one where we know this main character is rejecting that past that is, you know, pre-Civil War South, you know. So I like it very much because of that and because of all the imagery and everything that you said about, you know, relating to some of the other choices we have and everything, other books. So next two.
Next one I like is the one that begins with a thrill and then she's referring to Melanie. And I guess.
That's great. Those two are probably my top two, but go ahead. What's the next one?
Yep. And the next one is the "He never really existed at all except in my imagination. I must have made him up."
Yeah. I love that one, but I'm not as thrilled with it as, in terms of this year's project as the other three. I think the other three are stronger in terms of being able to do more with them and work more stuff. So
okay.
Should we pause those and go back to the beginning and go to Jane Eyre and then work our way, because we had a couple, I think we had a couple of options for all of our books so far, right?
Yeah.
This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.